We all know that cars mean traffic, errands, and budgets.
But they should also represent freedom and fun. Join us as we work to find everyone a car they'll love. I'm Paul.
I'm Todd. And this is the Everyday Driver Car Debate. Just kidding. That's not the design of the back. Let us show it to you for real. Sorry.
That's your open right there. That's your open.
Hi. Well, happy Friday. We are talking about the Corvette C8. It has just been revealed, and now we are recording a podcast. We stayed up late for this one,
everybody's
folks,
talking about
but
it.
But everybody's talking about it.
We want to make sure that all of you know that the Utah meetup is coming at us very quickly.
Yeah it is.
It's going to be here, and we're hoping you can make it. Come for any and all of it. Come mm-hmm. for just one of the events. Totally fine, or join us for all of it. We're going to be doing hiking, mountain biking. We're going to be doing a track day at the Utah Motorsports Campus.
Fantastic road tour is
NASA.
Happening. Many of you are flying in and renting Turo cars, and we've got those discussions coming up. That's going to be really, really cool. That's the first weekend of August, but prior to that, we just keep packing stuff into the schedule.
Why not?
We just put more things into the schedule.
Prior to that,
we're going to be in Seattle seeing our friends Griots, and we will keep you informed on this. We're going to do a live stream podcast. You're actually going to be able to see us this time.
Yeah. Yeah, no kidding.
We're going to be recording a podcast. It's going to be, that's that Monday, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Monday, the 20, what is it?
We have to look at a calendar. We were not prepared to actually tell you a date. That was not good. No, it's actually going to be Monday, the 29th of July.
Yes.
We will be actually at Griot's location. It'll be about 5 or 6 o'clock. We will lock in the time when we get closer. We've literally just confirmed this with them, which is why this is brand new news, and we clearly didn't even know the date. But it is Monday the 29th. That evening, we're going to do a live stream video. It will be on the Griot's channel, us with Nick from Griot's.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about all kinds of stuff. We'll probably take a ton of questions because it'll be a live stream. And then that will launch the next day, that Tuesday the 30th. That will be the podcast for that Tuesday. But it's going to be a live stream, which is going to be very different and really cool.
All right. So we've got some more cars to talk about here.
You brought up the point that this car has been revealed now.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks an awful lot like the renders.
Yeah, well, first of all, the Corvette has been revealed. So this is a good thing. We've
yes.
been waiting for the new Corvette,
well,
right? Let's start on a positive note. You always want to give...
There's plenty of positive notes
when you're giving criticism,
here.
You start with a positive note. You start with the positives when you're dressing somebody down or, you know, getting
Happy
a report.
This is your Friday rant. You knew we were going to rant.
Always start with the
we
positives.
We always rant when we watch these reveals, too.
Then you move to the constructive criticism, and then you really rant about
and
it.
And then
so
the ranting and
the
chewing the scenery, we're going to do all of the above, yeah.
There's a process. All right, so the good news is a new Corvette.
And it's mid-engine, finally.
It's mid-engine, yes.
You and I
like
were talking
that.
About two things, and I don't say this to elevate ourselves here, but it was very funny because you and I were sitting here watching this wondering, genuinely wondering, who in the room, including who at GM, has actually driven every generation? Because I kept showing all of these generations go by, and I started to have that thought of who's driven every generation. I'm thrilled that we were able to for American Original.
Yes.
And then somebody, one of the many executives that walked up, one of the early ones, I'm sorry, I forgot his name, but I don't have it in front of me, but his script felt lifted from our film.
It kind of did in
I was
a weird
like,
way.
This is weird.
Look,
this is really strange.
They do all their research.
Of
but,
course they
hey,
did.
Whatever.
And I'm sure they did the same research we did. I mean, the story is the story, but there were parts of it where
exactly.
I was like,
exactly.
Did you see an American Original? I mean, I hope you have, but anyways, I'm thrilled there's a C8. I'm thrilled that we've driven all the generations and now we can drive at some point the C8, which nobody's driven yet. This was the big dog and pony show reveal. And I'm sure you listening have many thoughts. And I know you're shocked to hear that we have thoughts too.
All right. I love that they have put the development time into this. And
agreed.
I keep thinking as we're watching the reveal, which I'm sure will be reposted, everybody can go look at the stats and specs. We're not going to name everything here. We'll touch on a few. But they have thought about track time. Imagine this, you know, running the endurance challenge races. Imagine, you know, all the things where Corvettes are used
yep.
and raced and need to shine
yep.
and they need to be better than the last generation.
But also thought about road trips and groceries and storage and removal.
Well, this
top
is what I'm getting at.
All this kind of stuff.
I don't think any other car has such an importance or a list of things that it needs to hit.
Interesting point.
Besides a Corvette. Because
interesting point.
You and I are talking about, well, gee, the Porsche 918 Spyder did that, or the 4GT looks better and it came out with different technology. It's more expensive. Or
and
name another McLaren.
And
other cars.
While we're there, the 4GT has the storage space of a small backpack.
Exactly.
Okay. So, I mean, you know.
So, for what the car is, I mean, starting with Corvettes were always affordable. They have to be accessible to enthusiasts.
Yeah.
You know, the cars we're talking about are millions or hundreds of thousands of dollars. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, they're out. And then, you know, just the change of the platform itself. Mm-hmm. Such a big deal. So mm-hmm. every time I think of a, well, that car is better, I come back to the requirements list that GM must have had
You're
in
right.
front of them.
You're right.
And I think, okay. So as a compromise, they did pretty good there. Let's start with the architecture.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's still, well, it's still the aluminum. It's still fiberglass and resin. And it's still a V8.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of like, I wanted it to be future tech. I wanted it to be some sort of electrification. I wanted it to push boundaries. I wanted them to bring all they've learned about the Chevy Volt and the Bolt mm-hmm. and bring the noise and really bring something totally unexpected. But they didn't. They brought out a mid-engine V8 car that actually is probably going to be pretty great to drive. I'm really excited to drive it.
I think so, yeah.
But it just seems like they started with the basics. They came back with just the basic recipe that we all could have predicted. And unfortunately, the internet has ruined the surprise.
You're right, actually. You were talking about this.
They rolled it out, and I thought, and maybe it is because of all the renderings, and frankly, some of the renderings I like better than what the actual car is. That's not a good thing. But they rolled the car out, and I thought, oh, that just looks dated already, and I'm disappointed. Maybe it's because I've been seeing it so much, and thank goodness they brought it out now, unlike, you know, the Acura NSX.
Well,
it was just a big deflated balloon, and hey, the new NSX.
Well, think about the fact that the auto show, I forget which auto show it was, but the auto show where the NSX was revealed, everybody kind of went, wah, wah, and across the show, Ford drops the new GT that nobody'd seen or even knew was in existence.
Yeah.
And it's great looking besides. But, I mean, this is the problem with these long gestating cars that we as the public know about. Mm-hmm. By the time we finally get to this place, we kind of go, yeah, uh-huh. Yeah, it's really hard to combat that. I am ecstatic that this car exists. I am ecstatic that it is mid-engine. Our American original film. We talk about the progression that leads them to kind of have to do this now. I'm thrilled that they did. I think it does maintain some Corvette look, which is great. I am astonished, like you said, I am astonished that they are worried about everything they're worried about. I mean, come on. Corvette has always been this sports car that also, by the way, gets good gas mileage. Who else is even worrying about that unless they're making a showcase hybrid? They're not.
Right.
So decent gas mileage on a road trip, carries your multiple golf bags because apparently people do that, but also carries the roof in the rear trunk. I mean, actually think that contributed to my number one critique of the look of this car. I actually have decided, watching it spin on the turntable. Now, look, we haven't seen it in person. That changes things. It always does.
It always does.
But I think I like it from every single angle, except straight from the back, I genuinely hate it.
I'm really trying to figure out why, though. I'm really trying to put my finger on the exact reason.
I think it looks too tall and too pinched, and the taillights are Camaro.
They are.
Because here's what happened.
The front is a blazer.
Well, the front has got Chevy design cues, but it still says Corvette. The back just says Camaro to me. And this happened a couple generations ago where the Camaro's taillights, the first Camaro actually you and I ever shot for the show, the Camaro's taillights for a little while were circles with the tops chopped off.
Mm-hmm.
And we knew actually that the designers were told, take the Corvette lights and make them for Camaro. And so they chopped the tops off. Well, then what happened the next gen Corvette? They took the Camaro idea and they developed it for the Corvette. And now the C8 has got what looks like the current latest refresh Camaro lights stuck on the back of the Corvette. This is an opportunity to do whatever you want.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a place where I just see, well, it has to look like everything else we make. And I think the back has been ruined by that, genuinely. I even like, here's the thing. If you just tilt it a little bit off of straight on the back view, give me a rear three-quarter, it still works. I'm still seeing the rear, but that straight back view I think is ugly, and the rest of the car I think is working. And that kind of breaks my heart a little bit. I still want to drive one like crazy. I still think
absolutely.
They're going to look amazing in motion. I like it better in blue than the red that they were showing off. I think the blue looks fantastic.
I also
think wheels that are not black help it too.
I agree. I'm fully on board with that. Well, as we're discussing, and I know everybody's going to dissect this car endlessly, other cars get a pass.
Mm.
The Ford GT, all the ones we've named, the McLarens, any mid-engine, Caymans, Elises get a pass in many categories.
Fair.
This car gets no reprieve, no passes from anybody from the interior. Look at the interior.
Mm-hmm.
I have my beef with the interior. The line of buttons and
I think it's cool.
The wall that will exist between you and the passenger, that I'm not a fan. Again, I have to drive it. But getting back to this requirements, I'm going to say this without having driven it yet. The car.
It is a car called the Corvette.
The car is so compromised, it's actually a winner. It's so compromised in so many categories. You know, just road trips. Think about what buyers of Corvettes use them for. They just cruise sometimes. They're not tracking them. They're not hustling them. Or, you know, track time or drivability or cargo or sound or name a category.
Well, yes.
But and they've touched on it. They've addressed
it. They've addressed them all.
And they've, they've done such a good job. And, I mean, stuff has to go.
Totally.
The car has to match the current lineup. It's a, I wish it were more futuristic looking. I wish it were pushed further. I wish it were a total clean slate because it is a clean slate. It's a brand new chassis.
It's the only time they'll ever get to do a completely clean slate.
Let's go
on Corvettes.
Nuts.
Yeah.
But no, they pulled it way back. So in every category, and there's probably hundreds of categories to deal with, it's so overcompromised, it actually succeeds because it still does. It still checks the box.
It's a, that is quite an accomplishment.
Good or bad, I mean, think it about, still does it.
Think about how few cars have on their same must-do build sheet. Same sheet. Great on the track. Great to drive cross-country with good gas mileage. Those are completely antithetical. Those are the bookends of car design right there.
Absolutely.
And the Corvette is accomplishing both because it's been told it has to.
I'm shocked they pulled it off, to be honest.
Yeah. I mean, I couldn't want to drive this more. I'm actually glad to have not been at the reveal because I don't want to stand near it and not get to drive it. That drives me nuts. That's the place I've reached now. I'm that spoiled. But honestly, I also have to say, you and I have been debating this. I'm thrilled it has a V8. I wish it had a manual transmission, but I'm not. But that doesn't surprise me.
There.
Considering the current market, I'm not surprised it doesn't have a manual. I wish it would.
Yeah.
I'm not surprised.
Yeah.
So that one, I don't like it, but I'm willing to let it go because I see the handwriting on the wall. But if this didn't have a V8, everybody would lose their mind.
Would they?
I think
the
so.
The GT does not have a V8.
And that's been a big thing that everybody has complained about.
It's the holy grail. When that one rolls up to the car show, people bow down to that
car. Yes, but that car also has a very different history than Corvette.
It does. Very true. Very
I mean,
true.
This it'd be the exact same as the 911 no longer has a flat six. It'd be the exact same change.
That day's coming. I'm sure that day's coming.
And can you imagine the freak out that happens when the 911 doesn't have a flat six anymore?
Yeah.
This is a Corvette with a naturally aspirated 6.2 liter V8. You can argue, and you can rightly argue, shouldn't we have gone different and modern? Yes, but from a historical perspective, that the longest running sports car, I mean, watch our film. I'm like quoting the film here, but longest running sports car, it's been a V8 since the beginning. I mean, they had that six briefly and went, what have we done? And then they put a V8 in and it's been V8s ever since. If they'd gone away from that, would be an even bigger problem than we are not offering a manual. I wish there was a manual. I look at the cockpit and I go, of course it's not a manual. And I like the cockpit, except for the weird canted screen, which looks like somebody had a day where there's like, screw it. We got to put a screen in here. But I don't
and
mind.
And they literally screwed it on.
I don't mind the wall of buttons. They've made a car for the driver, and I am okay with that.
Sure. You can do that without making this stack of buttons. You can make it driver focused.
Okay.
I bet you there were designs submitted, but the V8 is a compromise. If they had gone more tech or future technology, the car would cost more.
Yeah, for sure.
So let's make the current V8, it's still a 6.2, nearly 500 horsepower. It's more efficient, more power, probably runs better than any V8 they've ever built. They put a lot of effort into it. So, okay, compromise. No manual transmission, but hey, it's got an 8-speed dual clutch.
Dual clutch, yeah.
Okay, that'll, you know, satisfy a lot of people, hopefully.
Yeah.
An argument can be made in every category of compromise, and it's probably so compromised it's great.
That's an interesting perspective.
I bet you it's great.
Back to these bookends, though, if you think about it, if you are the guy that only wants to go to the track or you are the guy that only wants to drive cross-country, both of those buyers want an 8-speed dual clutch.
Right.
It's us and it's the folks in the middle that want to drive kind of fast on a nice afternoon on a back road. We're the ones that want the manual. Honestly, that was probably the easiest decision they made was losing the manual, because they were like, well, for the track people, they're going to want an 8-speed dual clutch because they can't shift as fast as that one anyway. And for the guy driving cross country, he just wants an automatic. We're done.
I hope they documented the fights, the internal meetings, because there were probably fights. Like,
well, there was the
knockdown, drag out.
I'm sure.
No, it happened.
There was the executive that said, we looked at every fastener, tube, and wire. Of course you did, because accounting requires it. That's not unique to Corvette.
Yeah, we're playing Mystery Science.
Oh my gosh,
Science Theater 3000 with the reveal.
I am a NASA geek. Yes, yes. This week is the 50th anniversary of the Apollo 11 mission landing on the moon. Yes, the astronauts liked Corvettes, or in many cases were given Corvettes at very cheaply or next to nothing, so that they were driving Corvettes. All of that is true. I get it. Mm-hmm. I get it. This is not equivalent to the moonshot. Even though it's very impressive.
It's not cool.
But if you're going to tie that together, what are you doing in California? Why was this not in one of those NASA hangars at Cape Canaveral? If you're going to go there, let's go there.
I agree. Okay, before we move on to the other supercar that was revealed this week.
Oh, yeah, that.
I want to introduce a new thought for us all to consider about the Corvette.
Okay. I'm excited about it.
In spite
of my ranting,
I am
excited about it.
I'm very excited. Really, we want to drive it. I believe that now with this configuration, and that it can answer anything you throw at it. Oh, well, it doesn't have cargo space. Well, it's got a front trunk and a you know, a rear trunk, and name the thing. Mm-hmm. I bet you this Corvette will now be open and compete actually against more cars than any prior Corvette ever did in terms of what it can be compared to. It can be compared to still 911s. It can be compared to Caymans and McLarens. It can be compared to higher-end cars that have that supercar, you know, air quotes, configuration.
Yeah.
It can be compared to, you know, from a price standpoint. Hey, you want to step up just a little bit? And, hey, the Corvette's not too much more expensive than they were before.
Yeah.
I'll bet you this new design actually opens up more places for it to compete against as a rational decision.
They've sweated it. They've clearly sweated it.
Clearly.
The design is not quite unique enough for me. I would like it to be more.
I agree with that.
Just go a little nuts. Let the Corvette mid-engine be. You've got to be kidding. And don't worry as much about this has to have a corporate look. I realize that's an idea that dies early on, and I'm sure there is a designer out there that wants to send me an email about how much they fought and lost that battle.
Yeah.
It's still cool. And I'm thrilled they got it away from the Camaro, because it needed desperately to get away from the Camaro. It needs to be very different. And there, look, we haven't heard prices yet. Maybe by the time you heard this, you've heard prices. They're claiming it's still going to be attainable. I think that's a flexible word when you consider the fact that the ZR1 was already, what, $130,000? So Corvettes have been very expensive.
But think about what that competed against in terms of power.
Yes. So this base one, you know, theoretically is going to still be well under 100 grand, but we'll see where it lands. I also just had this thought. The original NSX.
Yeah.
One of the only issues I had with that car's design, if you look at, because I really like it, if you look at it from side profile, it has a huge rear overhang. The space from the rear of the rear tire to the back bumper is immense.
And gave it a little tiny trunk.
The
That's
reason
what it's
is because of a little tiny trunk. Yeah. I think that need for the we have to take the top off the C8 and put it in the trunk, and also that has to fit golf bags, has given them a difficult thing on the rear of the car. I think overall the proportions still work, but that's a challenge, because you take some look at the Ferraris that this clearly looks referencing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
The 458, for example, okay? But back to the 360 Modena. Even back there, you can see design reference there.
Sure.
Those are just engine. They don't need to do anything else but have an engine back there.
Yeah.
And the Corvette has done an engine and then still given you a trunk. That is hard, and that makes a rear end of the car that has got to do a lot of stuff.
I maintain it's so overcompromised that it actually is a winner. It came out on top because of what it can do. Because you can always point to it and be like, well, yeah, I've got trunk space. You can take a road trip in it.
Yeah.
And apparently there's more interior space, even, you know, despite the photographs of it looks really tight, but we'll see.
Yeah, well, I'm sure they have
run excited. It's meeting expectations, but I think overall everybody's going to come away thinking, wow, for what it is. And we're just looking at a base model. Think of all the special models they can now do, that this has opened up this world to them for race cars and special editions and gobs of power and the wide body edition and on and on and on.
I think the wow factor has been a little bit blunted by two things. By the places where it has to look connected to Chevy and the fact that we've all been, quote unquote, looking at this car for 6 months already.
More than that.
No, but I think it's been close for 6 months. Oh, we've been looking at, for the, at renders, what the final and camo is. Cars yeah. and this kind of stuff where we kind of already know what it's going to be. Yeah. You contrast, again, it's the Acura versus the Ford GT thing. You contrast that with the way the Ford GT drops out of the sky. I don't know how Ford's able to figure that out, but they've done it now. A couple times.
Yeah.
So the fact that they can just drop a car out of nowhere and everybody else is like, where has this been developed? The minute you start driving it at the ring, there are standard photographers that are going to take pictures of it. But this was the problem with the NSX and the Supra and a lot of these that have been developed. By the time we got to them, we were kind of like, yeah, it looks like that. And it should be like, whoa, have you seen this thing?
I wish, but maybe that'll change with the driving. There's actually another car that was released this week, also in the very high-end supercar,
this is a whole different
category.
World now.
Similar configuration, though.
Yes.
It's a mid-engine car. Well, a mid-engine look to it.
Lotus is bragging again. Last time Lotus bragged, they were the CEO was Danny Behar, who came out of Red Bull. Because, you know, it gives you wings, and now you can run a car company.
Right, of course
it does. He said Lotus was going to do 5 cars. They did none of those. Just so you know. They said 5 cars.
He was a little over-enthusiastic.
They did none of those.
He was a
But the difference here now is Lotus, of course, is owned by Geely.
Mm-hmm.
They have money. They have done great things for Volvo.
Yeah,
they've given Volvo all the things that Volvo needed to go be the best Volvo possible.
Well, then they've stepped away. They've
exactly.
given them the resources
exactly.
and stepped back and haven't influenced
Let's
them.
Hope that's true at Lotus as well. But Lotus has thrown down with, it's the Evija.
Okay, all right.
E-V-I-J-A.
All right.
Which, I'm sorry, I know we have to, the Huayra. Pagani Huayra is another great example, where you look at the word and you're like, that's not how that should be pronounced.
Uh-huh.
This is the Evija, and I will probably either do that by joking or just do it by accident. But it is the Evija, so think Evora and Evija.
Yes,
okay?
Yes.
And it's the one or whatever, but this is their $2 million ridiculous comma in it horsepower, all-electric hypercar. Lotus has decided to skip we Elise owners for a minute and just shoot for the Pagani owners of the world and then trickle back.
I don't know that Lotus was ever in the category of we're making cars for everybody kind of thing.
Well, but
they're making special cars
yes,
from day one.
Yes, they have always been that. But I always feel like they've been more in the Porsche camp where they're just out of reach, mm-hmm. aspirational, than in the McLaren or Ferrari camp where it's like, well, those are great, but I'm never going to touch one, let alone drive it. I feel like Lotus has been with Porsche on that.
Mm-hmm.
This is shooting really high when your entire lineup right now is the Evora 400, which, by the way, is brilliant, and the Elise if you are anywhere but the U.S. Great cars, but both well under $100,000, and now you're doing $2 million electric. This is a throwdown. I hate talking about concepts. I hope it is A, real, B, awesome, and C, is the beginning of a lineup from Lotus versus just a, oh yeah, you did that thing a few years back.
Well, before we touch on the stats and specs of this car, let me connect the dots for you.
Okay.
First of all, we're in Utah. The former Miller Motorsports Park was now finally purchased by MyTime, which is a division of Geely.
Yes.
Geely owns Lotus.
Mm-hmm.
The Ford Performance Racing School for all the asphalt activities have now announced their relocation to North Carolina. The off-road stuff will still stay in Utah.
Yeah.
But that means there's some room now
there's
for
no performance
somebody
school.
To come yeah. in and run a performance school.
Yeah.
I don't know who that be, but maybe the track owners who own
I wonder if the owners
hypercar
of the
company,
know any company
bring some cars and a driving school out to because they own the track.
And I'll be waiting at the front gate in my Lotus going, me,
beep,
pick
beep,
me.
Beep. Yeah. Right here. Ooh. All right. So this is the Type 130. It's an all-electric, all-wheel drive, 4 electric motors. The target is to be the most powerful production car in the world, almost 2,000 horsepower. And what's so cool is the charging capabilities. The difference between this and the Corvette we just saw, well, you know, the Corvette and the Ferraris and, well, every other car has engine under glass. This has battery pack under glass.
Yeah, yeah. And
I'm not kidding.
It's the other end of the spectrum of current released cars. You have the Corvette, which is a revelation in its own right, but is representing where we've been,
mm-hmm.
and this is where we think we're going. And, I mean, I'm back to bookends again. These are the opposite ends of the spectrum on everything.
They really are. And, yeah, 18-minute charge time with a 350-kilowatt charger.
If you can find one.
250-mile range. Well, yeah. They're even claiming an 800-kilowatt charger, but Those don't really exist, even at the commercial level, I don't think.
Yeah, I don't think that happens yet.
I mean, that would just be like filling your tank with gas.
We're talking four motors, roughly 500 horsepower each, one for each wheel. Yeah. So this is a car whose single wheel is more powerful than the other cars they currently sell.
So a single wheel equates, so you've got four new C8 Corvettes at each wheel.
Yes, or you have more than four Evoras worth of power if you stay on the same brand.
Yeah, and 1.7 million pounds, it's $2.1 million.
So we're all getting one. All of
clearly.
Us. We're just all getting one.
We can't because it's called the Type 130 and they're only building 130 of them.
Yeah. Well.
So yeah, it truly is the other end. But if you have a chance to see this, the design ethos comes from geological structures, interestingly enough.
Sure it does.
I told you, it's always car designers running to nature to find themes because nature does it the best.
Uh-huh.
Look at this car very carefully. Look at the shapes, how they interact. The IP is actually a beam that runs, that spans the car. You can actually kind of see down through it.
Looks phenomenal.
It is amazing. Lotus has brought it, and yes, we hope to see them out here at UMC.
Who knows? Well, but I'm just excited to hopefully see one at some point. This is in that same category that keeps bugging me, though. These are cars built for collectors to not drive, and that breaks my heart.
Brings me back to the Corvette, because, again, you want something affordable. You want that Lotus. You want a McLaren. You can't afford one? Have you seen the new C8?
And here's the thing. The C8, and I'm excited, genuinely excited about this. The C8, the first time you see one at your local Cars and Coffee, no one will look at any other car. They're just going to swarm that car the first time you see one. And a year later, it's going to be ignored. Because so many people are going to buy the C8 because they can.
This leads me to a great question before we take a break here. And that is, many of you have asked, what will happen to the values of C7s?
Mm-hmm.
What do we think this is going to do? Are they going to stabilize or go up because you can no longer get the front engine, rear wheel drive Corvette? Mm. Are they going to plummet because suddenly, hey, look, an affordable mid-engine kind of hot car? What do we think they're going to do?
Genuinely hot car, yeah. I think, what was your answer on this?
No, I think they're going to stay about the same for the moment because the C8 is not actually, available to buy at this recording. But once it does, I think they're still going to, I don't think they're going to drop like a rock for the C7s. I really don't.
I think the only ones that'll hold their value are the special editions. I think if you have
everything
a standard
go off
C7
cliff,
with a Z51 pack, it is going to start dropping fast. But I think if you've got a Z06 or the ZR1 and possibly the Grand Sports, but I think Z06 and ZR1 for sure will hold their value longer because that is the pinnacle, if you will, of what Chevrolet did with the front engine. It's not the standard C7. Even with the Z51 pack, which makes the car worthwhile, that's not the pinnacle of what they did. It's either Z06 or ZR1, depending upon how you want to drive the car.
Sure.
That's the pinnacle. That's the never going to be seen again. Those will linger a bit. I think everything else drops.
Well, I certainly don't think prices on the front engine cars are going to go up. I really don't.
It'll be that 20 to 40 year swath that always happens with collector cars.
Yeah.
20 to 40 years from now, they might turn around for the guy that, please don't do this, mothballed the car.
Yeah,
with plastic on the seats, and now it's just a museum piece. But the rest of them, yeah.
Yeah. So that just means for all of our listeners who are actually shopping in the lower price range for a fun sports car can now afford, we'll say, just a base Corvette. That opens up a world of possibilities for used. You realize that? If they do that and only special editions hang on, that opens up a world for us to go buy
the C7.
And they're truly good cars.
The C7 Z51 is a phenomenal car, genuinely.
I mean, that's just great news if they drop off a cliff.
And I'm very excited to hear pricing on this C8. I'm ecstatic to drive it. I know why you did red with the wheels. I get it. I just don't think maybe it's just because I don't like red enough, but I thought the blue looked great.
Hey, Chevy said they came out
with
12 colors.
12 colors and a bunch of interior options.
Never did that before.
It looks like, I like the interior. I like it. Here's the thing. I wish they'd gone as let's start again with the exteriors that clearly did with the interior.
Mm-hmm. Well, now the fun begins because we got to go decide what to put it against.
Yeah, there you go. There are a couple of things. Probably one of them has the numbers 911 in it. Anyway.
We're often asked how we find the cars that we recommend to all of you listening. Whether it's local or nationwide, our searches start with Auto Tempest. Instead of searching each car shopping site separately, you can enter all your parameters for the car you're looking for into Auto Tempest one time, and then you can search for them all at once.
See results from Cars.com, Cars Direct, eBay, and more. Or you can jump to Auto Trader or Car Gurus without entering anything new. Same parameters, new site. You can even search all of Craigslist. Think about how hard it is to search Craigslist nationwide, one at a time. AutoTempest.com has got you covered there all at once.
AutoTempest can help you find your next new or used car, whether there's a dozen in your neighborhood or two in the country. Plus, the people at AutoTempest listen to this podcast, and they're always refining the site for more features. They've got research tools, buyer and seller guides, and they're listening to what their users need.
So if you're doing your own drive homework, you're chasing your dream car, or just looking to feed the disease, as we are all the time, AutoTempest.com is your place to start.
We all have a lot of to-do lists, and some of them get quite long. You know, drop off the dry cleaning, pick up some milk. Here's an idea, though. Let's add save hundreds of dollars on car insurance to that list. And the good thing is, you don't have to drop off or pick up anything.
All you have to do is go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you could save, you've heard it before, 15% or more on your car insurance.
Extra money in your pocket? This just may be the most rewarding to-do thing on your list today. Summer is finally here, and with that comes sunshine and blistering hot car interiors. You know, the leather seats that you thought were a great idea until you scald your legs.
Luckily, all you need is a custom sunscreen from our friends at Covercraft. They're awesome. They're amazing. These foldable sunscreens fit perfectly in the windshield of your car and keep your car cooler when you're off enjoying the sunshine.
These custom sunscreens come in a variety of colors, and they're an affordable and simple way to keep your car cooler in the summer and protected from damaging UV rays all year long.
We swear by our custom sunscreens. I love it. It's one of our very favorite car accessories. Remember, you can get 10% off your car sunscreen by using the code EVERYDAY right now at covercraft.com, or you can follow the link from our sponsors page. We're back with a very cool car debate from Bulgaria. Now, this is from Peter. Peter's writing in, and I have to kind of call him out for a second because I want to okay. call out Americans in the process.
Okay.
Peter, you knew who you were writing to, and that is Americans. And I hate to say this, but we are notorious as a country for not knowing geography of the rest of the world. And what makes me laugh about that, because it is genuinely sad, and hopefully you know some geography if you're listening to this podcast, but what makes me genuinely sad and laugh about this is that Peter knew who he was writing to, Americans who may not have any idea of the rest of the globe. So he actually writes, "I'm writing to you from Bulgaria, a country in Eastern Europe." And I thought,
well done,
yeah,
Peter.
I've heard of Bulgaria. I'm even vaguely aware of where it is, but I appreciate the fact that you were writing and you went, wait. They may have no idea that this country exists. So you're writing from Bulgaria, and here's one of the reasons we're doing your car debate is because we're just thrilled that you're listening from there.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, Peter, thanks for writing. He is 22. He lives there. I'm curious, actually. I got on Google Maps, and I actually dropped the little dude on the maps to go down to street level just actually in a car comparison, because surprisingly it's a good way to find out what cars are in, you know, various countries.
Oh, you were actually location scouting for cars.
Yes, because you can sit there, look around and be like, oh, you've got plenty of Mercedes MLs and you've got plenty of Renaults.
I haven't thought of that before. Bravo on that.
You know, I just dropped on the city center. By the way, you've got some great architecture. The National Museum is there.
That's cool.
I looked at hotels. It was very interesting, very educational. It's like
the places we go when we look up stuff for this podcast are places we would never go otherwise.
Well, it's like you joke, you know, if you can't afford to take the family on a, you know, a vacation,
yes,
you get on a video game and you drive the courses that are in like Rome. Like, hey kids, look, it's Rome.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
It's the made up Rome course.
And hey, like, look, the Parthenon. Hey, we're going all over
the National
place.
Museum for Italy right there. Hey, look. Okay, we'll come back around in just a minute. My lap time is not so great. Hang on, kids.
After Greece, it's Turkey. It's going to be awesome. Yeah,
we're going to Japan on Saturday.
Yeah, it's terrible.
On the video game, but you know, hey.
Yeah.
All right.
We go to all over the place. Actually, you know what? Side note. I'm wondering, we've been asking the audience a lot of questions of late. I'm wondering about adding a pilgrimage trip in the spring and going to Spain and Portugal.
Hey.
We've joked about it before.
Well, we've been talking about it longer than we've been joking about it.
We've been talking about it for a couple of years.
As soon as we start joking about it, then it's actually semi-serious.
Yeah,
which
this is true.
Funny.
This is true. But the reason I'm bringing it up again is because I've had a couple of conversations offline, off the show about it, because this would be the bring your spouse trip.
Right.
Now,
right.
The downside to that is more expensive.
It's going to be more expensive.
But it would be the
sure.
day at the beach, day with the architecture, intermixed with cool tracks. Still with our friends at RSR, they have an event. I was looking today. They have an event that's happening in March.
Oh, don't.
So I'm starting to wonder. Even though pilgrimage hasn't even happened yet, but I'm still thinking about that because let's be honest, my wife would like to go.
Well, you know? Sure. Hey, we're always thinking about the long-term aspect of all these ideas. We have plenty of ideas.
That's
and a stunningly lack of money to be able to go execute said ideas.
On those lines, our crazy cheap car challenge might happen via GoFundMe, because a lot of you guys have said you would be up for that. So we're still kind of talking about that. So we'll come back around to that.
There's a 95 XJR on Bring a Trailer right now with, I think it's 47,000 miles, somewhere in there.
Okay.
Ruby red.
Okay.
It's beautiful. It looks great. It spent its whole life in Texas, I think. Mm-hmm. Looks great. Plus, there's three 928s. What's wrong with me? I'm going backwards. I want 928s and a Jaguar XJR from the 90s.
Nothing's wrong with you. You have the disease, and we are constantly looking at cars. And at some point, as you get into lots and lots of new stuff, you also are looking backwards like, what did I miss? What did I miss?
Exactly.
I missed that one.
Well, it's because they're cheap now.
Exactly.
You can afford
them. It's crazy. Sorry, let's get back. Let's get back to our friend Peter in Bulgaria, which, by the way, is in Eastern Europe.
Exactly. All right, Peter used to drive a 92 Renault Clio 5-door as his first car. He said it started coming apart when he became a more confident driver.
It's one of those cars that's good at 6/10, and at 8/10, it just gives up.
Like, yeah. Or are we talking duct tape and wire, and what are we holding the car together with? Well, he's doing the same thing to his current Mercedes-Benz CLK 1999 coupe. He said the car is a factory supercharged 4-cylinder engine. He says it's uninspiring, but it's, you know, occasional spirited drive, which is good. He has spared no expense in maintaining it, and while it's very reliable, just wanted you to hear that, no expense in maintaining, and it's reliable.
Mm-hmm.
German cars. Everybody hearing that now?
Well, but the key part of the first part of that is key. He has maintained everything that's needed to be done when it's needed to be done. That means it hasn't surprised him beyond the, oh, look, it needs something at this mileage.
Correct. Yeah. All right, so it's now starting to show its age. He says suspension components are mostly worn out. The car corners poorly.
Yeah, that's a good understatement.
He's not sure about a suspension upgrade or a rebuild or anything. So he's going to be coming into some money after a few months at a new job. And he's considering the following vehicles. But what's good is, despite not having a budget in the email here, he's coming into a new job and coming probably into more money. So we're estimating. Actually looking at the exchange rates, by the way, the country Bulgaria is in the European Union, so we can, you know, speak in euros.
Okay,
it's
good.
Just fine.
Good.
All right.
Yeah.
So he's talking about the Frog Eye, the WRX wagon. He says, blah, bye, Hawkeye, whatever you want to do it. He says he's always been a fan of the flat four turbo, Mark V Volkswagen Golf GTI, but he's worried about dull driving dynamics. Tires could be a nice solve.
But the Mark V is not known to be one of the better gens.
It's not.
Just not one of the better gens. Yeah.
He's also looking at a Ford Focus ST, the Mark II generation. Mm-hmm. He says it looks great on paper, doesn't know too much about it. And then a couple of BMWs, an E9330i, because he can't afford the 335 maintenance.
Yeah.
And the BMW E60, the 530i.
Yeah.
And he says these are about the same price as the E90s around that area. He says, though, it's, you know, a much bigger car. Mm-hmm. However, he wants a bigger car. Did you notice this?
He's intrigued by it, for sure. He's up for it. The big thing is he does his own maintenance, and he's looking for something that he realizes, I'm coming out of a Mercedes. So, for example, things like a Fiesta ST, the first-gen Fiesta ST, are probably out because he wants a little bit better interior than that, because he's coming out of a Mercedes. An older Mercedes, sure, but still. So we've got to have some interior considerations here. And he wants to have more fun. But he values handling over comfort, but he is still remembering, I had that Mercedes. So he's got a baseline, if you will.
Sure, and he's now used to that Mercedes interior, despite it being a 99.
Yeah,
he's still used to that next jump up.
Totally.
Okay. All right, so he's wanting some advice here. He wants to be able to haul four or five people while maintaining character. He said hot hatchbacks are also up his alley, but he has no experience with too many and not the ones listed, for sure.
Okay.
He's eyeing BMWs, he's eyeing the German cars, and I think some tasty considerations for you. I started, Peter, at the 2013 Mercedes A-Class.
Mm,
this is the third generation.
Sure.
We never got it in the States.
We didn't. The fun-looking little shoe. Yeah.
Now, I'm not saying A45. Those are probably still out of your price range.
They'd be awesome,
estimating
though. Yeah.
Probably 20,000 euro top, 18.
Yeah, that seems like that's about where we are. It's hard to know for sure, but it seems about where we are. And because you've also said that you kind of have this, I get the sense that the budget is expanding because of the new job. So I get the feeling,
which is a good thing.
Like the earlier you buy, the less you'll have. So you might wait 6 more months and get in, you know, a lot more car. I don't know.
Caution to the wind. Know, and we leased a brand new Mercedes.
Exactly.
Something.
Yeah. Go on.
I don't know. All right. So I liked your suggestions. That 330i really was intriguing. And so I went looking for a 2012 BMW 330i diesel wagon, which are, there are plenty and they're cool looking. So I found one in black for a great price. I think it was around 10,000-12,000 euro. And there's, you know, of course, the mileage kilometers are, you know, very wildly vary.
Sure, of course they do.
But you can find some pretty low mileage even back in 2012. But then I went searching for Seats.
Oh, I like it.
Because we're sticking with German, because you had mentioned the GTI and that Mark V, think of Seat as a sort of budget GTI.
The alternative, the cheaper Volkswagen alternative. You're right. That's a good point.
And because that had intrigued you, I went looking for the Seat Leon.
Sure, yeah.
Which we had back in 2017 on our last pilgrimage trip when we were
in
Germany.
Yeah, yeah.
And I really liked that car. Mm-hmm. You had to, you know, really wring its neck to get it to do anything, but it was turbocharged goodness, and you could hang out at 220 on the Autobahn. It's great.
By the way, kilometers per hour.
Kilometers.
But you bring that up. I mean, that essentially was a GTI for less money.
Exactly right.
That's exactly what it was. That's a great point. I like it.
So the third generation, if possible, otherwise it's the 2012 to present, which, again, depending on your budget.
Yeah, yeah.
But there is the Leon Cupra, which is the hot flavor.
Yeah.
If you can find one. And by the way, I went searching on Seat's website. There are no Seat dealers in Bulgaria, sadly.
Okay.
There are in Romania, just to the north.
Oh, there you go.
However, there are Seats for sale in Bulgaria. They are there. Mm. And if you do need dealership service, otherwise you could probably take it to a Volkswagen dealer, I would think.
I would imagine so. They probably aren't going to look at weird components. Out. Yeah, good point.
And Romania is not too far away. I don't know where in Bulgaria you're at, but hopefully it's not too far of a drive. Plus you get to, you know, take a drive.
Yeah.
But my last choice here for you, Peter, is the first generation or second generation BMW 1 Series 5-door or 3-door.
I like this
they
idea.
Always turn my head when we're in Europe.
They're one of those forbidden fruit cars.
They
we
really
always
are.
Always seem like, wait, there's one of those. Those are so cool.
Totally. Yeah. We never got those 1 Series here in the States again.
Yeah.
And they're distinctive because, you know, actually doing my thing on Google Earth, looking around at all the cars, I was imagining Peter driving the 1 Series through.
You really dug in on this. I like this.
I did.
You did the virtual car debate on this one. I really like it.
Yeah, it was fun. It was really interesting. And so I thought, okay. You know, there's a lot of, you know, white, black, and silver cars and just kind of the muddy, you know, sea of non-distinctive cars.
Yes.
But then what about this 1 Series, especially a 3-door standing out?
It can take five people in a pinch.
Four is ideal, but otherwise, you're going to be hooning this thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like a Scirocco meets the first generation BMW shoe.
Interesting description. I see how you got there.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like a shooting brake, but it's small, but it's a fun rear-wheel drive car.
Yeah, I love it.
That's
kind of
what I'm thinking for
very
you.
Cool.
But again,
like
depends
that.
On your budget. And could be really distinctive, Peter.
I like that. I've got one that I want to add to your group because I like the group of where you are as far as finances are concerned. And then I have two new cars that are on the bottom end affordability-wise that I think, depending upon how far you're able to go, that you might be in your, end of the year I could do that kind of budget.
Okay.
Versus the right now budget.
Okay.
So they're fairly affordable, but they might be just above where you are, but I think they'd both be good considerations. The one I want to add to your list so far, because I like that Seat a lot, is the Renault Megane.
Not the
current. They've got a brand new one that's been out a year or so. Okay, and I will admit not knowing my Megane
probably
that
fairly
well,
expensive
obviously.
At this point. Still.
But the prior gen, see how high up you can get in the food chain of those used. I mean, we drove both the 265 and I think the 270 on the ring.
We did, yeah.
So the Renault Megane is a great chassis.
They're really surprising.
It run all sorts of comparos in all sorts of hot hatchback European magazines. The Megane was always way up there on the list in pretty much any spec. Get the highest spec you can afford. But again, that's last generation Megane at this point. I mean, only a couple years old, but it's last gen Megane, which means it's going to be cheaper. I think you really should take a look at a Renault Megane. I have two new cars, though.
Okay.
One is the Hyundai i30N.
Ho, 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 ho.
That's going to be somewhere in the neighborhood of 20,000 euros, okay? I'm not sure in your specific area. I didn't dig in as far as
that's
you did.
That's a stealth little meatball right there.
And it's cool. It's a great little hot hatch. We're actually going to drive it at the ring this year. I'm looking forward to it. So the i30N from Hyundai. And then also the brand new version that we don't get, the brand new 3-cylinder Fiesta ST.
Oh.
Also getting rave reviews. Also good about €20,000.
Good one. I forgot about that car.
And limited slip differential now and improved interior. So the issues with the prior the Fiesta ST we do get don't exist anymore.
Mm-hmm,
and you can get that car new.
But you're right. You know, it might be a bit more expensive, brand new, you know, depreciation,
I don't
all
know
those
how,
things
I don't know how far he's able to go, but both of those are really good new options that I think would serve you well for a long time. Plus, you'd get warranty. Plus, you'd get latest tech. I think those are really good candidates if you're willing to make that leap. I'm not sure how far the leap is. If not, I love your suggestions, and I think the Renault Megane's an option.
Nice. By the way, Peter, Renault fields an F1 team, and their cars are really good, and you can actually buy the Bell & Ross Renault watch, the Formula One sponsorship from Bell & Ross, so that it all ties together there.
Suddenly we want watches again.
It all works. No, I like your Ford idea. I mean, that is the car we need in the States.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I cannot believe the decision-making.
Well, unfortunately, it probably wouldn't sell very well here, which is, I'm sure somebody ran the numbers and went, doesn't make sense, but that's a tragedy for those of us that love that current gen, the Fiesta ST we just finished, want the new one. I'm bummed. I really am.
No kidding. Peter, thanks so much for writing. We're jumping to social media questions.
Yep.
Man, it just continues. You guys are awesome.
Yeah, I love it.
It's great. I want to start out with the big one.
Okay.
The big question.
Uh-oh.
Of everybody for this round, I think Jeremy Homrich takes the cake on Facebook with all the Turbo 4s and 6s making big power.
Oh, okay. All right, all right.
Should the long-running phrase, the phrase everybody knows, there's no replacement for displacement, should this phrase be retired? Hmm. Is it sailing off into the sunset of, you know, electric cars now far surpassing the horsepower output of any, really?
Sure, sure,
unless
sure,
it's,
yeah,
you know, a turbo with the size of your head and it comes from Japan, you know.
There's
what
no
I mean?
Replacement for voltage? Where are we headed here? Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Well, I think you're right. I think this phrase will only apply to drag racers, but even drag racers are finding tough times with electric, you know, the farm truck, and then the electric cars come along, then the turbo sixes, and then the little, you know, Golf Polo that smokes everybody with 1,200 horsepower and a four-cylinder and three turbos or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, honestly, boost is boost, and power is power. I mean, if you win, you can't claim, well, you know, still no match for a V8. Well, actually, I just beat
you. It just was. Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting point. Interesting point.
And it actually kind of is a sign of the times, because V8s, naturally aspirated, just used to be the deal. Mm-hmm. That was the thing to give you the torque and the power.
Yes. And now that forced induction has been manipulated so that we have multivane turbos and all these kind of things, so that you wind up with wall of torque from 1,400 RPMs to somewhere around 5,000 RPM. As a result, wall of torque, that's what you used to like about the big V8s. And now your little four-cylinder, it's just ready to be on boost right now. So it is interesting that I have torque. This is the big thing. I have torque all the time. That used to be the big thing about big engines.
Right.
And now we've got torque all the time in little stuff. The problem is it dies out faster, but
that's when the second turbo kicks in.
Seriously. But this is the reason the Fiesta ST that we talk about so much is so glorious, is because where it's really on boost is the place you use it most of the time. So it just feels like it's always got grunt, even though it's more like it's got squeak. It's got a tiny little engine and it still works.
All right, so there's no replacement for kilowatts, voltage.
I don't know.
Oh, there's no replacement for technology.
Well, there you go. That doesn't have nearly
as
interesting
catchy,
a ring, though. I just don't like it. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, so I guess we're moving on to turbos.
Kyle wrote in on Facebook. He asked about the upcoming Utah meetup. I'm glad you're coming, man. He said, okay, he's debating his Turo rental for the meetup. He said, should he get the F-Type, Jaguar F-Type, or should he spend a little extra and get the Audi R8 manual? Now, I'm wondering if this is the black first-gen Audi R8 manual that Andrew, damn it, Patton had last year. If so, car is pretty. You should actually pay what is the extra? How much extra is it? I think you should get the R8 manual. That is a genuinely special car. That first gen with the 4.2 liter and the six-speed gated shifter, that was a moment in time car of the R8s. That is a fun experience. I think you'd still love the F-Type, but I bet you that the F-Type is an auto. And that would be better manual, too. The R8 is a special car. So I think you should go for the R8. I'm just saying. And we'll be excited to see you. And we'll go, the same car from last year. And Andrew will walk up and tell you what he learned. It'll be great.
No, I like that. Well, especially if you don't drive a manual currently. then this is a great opportunity to get in a German car that's mid-engine and manual transmission. I'm with you. Although we do like that F-Type.
Yeah, I mean, you wouldn't go wrong either place. You'd have a great time either way, but yeah.
All right, there's a question on Instagram from ForerunnerForLife98 asking, a little bit of a different question, do factory wide-body cars like the Ford Raptor, and I suppose we could throw the wide-body Hellcat and Charger in the mix now.
The entire Dodge lineup, the wide Dodges. That's true. Yeah.
I guess, they're all wide, aren't they? Does this change in how it performs in the small overlap crash test? If you don't know what this test is, it's kind of the glancing blow. So the car is going straight in the NHTSA testing videos. The car is going straight ahead, but it doesn't fully hit the wall. It just might hit a portion of the headlight.
Yeah, imagine so you just hit it with one headlight, like you're trying to shave off a section of the car.
Right. So the car goes, it spins the car one direction depending on the side you hit, but it's common because, cars can clip each other.
Yeah.
Now, he's saying that there's only, 25% of the body, so does it being wider actually push the strong frame rails further away, therefore bypassing the strong parts of the car that you need in the small overlap crash? Keep in mind, everything has to be still crash tested.
Yeah, for sure, for sure.
And I would think, depending, it's hard to say across the board because of the nature of crashes. No two are alike.
Yeah.
I mean, there's standards, obviously, now with, some sort of benchmark, but I would say that it would lead to even more of a glancing blow if it's, it's just tear your sheet metal off, essentially. Yeah. But those frame rail, I mean, we're not talking it's a foot wider.
Yeah.
It's few inches at
most. Yeah, good point.
So I don't know that it would affect it so dramatically as to suddenly claim that wide-body cars are now unsafe in an overlap small crash.
Well, but you also know that the manufacturers are finding out what is the absolute outer edge that I can change this body style and not have to re-crash test it.
Right.
Somebody has run that equation that out for
That's true, because the crash test is expensive and it's a time-consuming process. Everybody hates it.
Jay Doherty, 787, decided to have some crazy money fun and said, if it hasn't been asked yet, he wants to know, if either of us were to win the lottery, like tons of money, his example is like $500 million, what would be the car we would buy immediately?
What are you thinking?
McLaren 720S.
That's a tasty choice.
I mean, I think I would, because I think that car would just be, I'd be thrilled with it. And then I could go be a connoisseur about other things. I'd chase down a nice Eagle E-Type. I'd chase down some other things. It'd take some digging.
Sure.
But it'd be like the check cleared the bank and I called McLaren and I have it by lunch. I mean, we're getting this done. Okay.
I was initially thinking a warehouse.
Well, yeah, but he's talking about
cars. So I pulled back, and the story around the Koenigsegg Jesko really hit home, because if you guys don't know this story, it's actually very personal. The Jesko was named after Christian von Koenigsegg's father. But if you don't know, he's 80 now, and I think back in his 60s when Christian was really starting out, he put a second mortgage on the house to get Christian started.
Wow.
And thought, I'll just help out a few days a week and dabble around with my son's project, and ended up working 6 or 7 days a week, working his fingers to the bone to get his son's now world-famous hypercar company off the ground, which is now a leader in technology and innovation.
Yeah.
And he got this thing off the ground. So he has just as much invested as Christian does. And it was a tear-jerking moment. At the Geneva reveal, when they revealed this car. And it was just, I love the personal connection. It wasn't just another car and I named it after my dad. No, there's this huge, deep backstory, and it affected him deeply. And it was more about families coming together rather than the car itself.
That's cool.
And it struck me. Plus, the car is pretty crazy looking and I love it and I want it.
If you had crazy money, you'd go buy a Jesko. I see where you're going.
There
is. All right. Okay, good.
All right. What else you find on here?
Holt Nico says, you're coming to a stoplight and you're going to stop. No chance of going through it. You're going to stop behind traffic. Do we, A, do what he describes as the limo stop, the soft and gentle with no lurch at the end, or do we do the car and driver 60-0 test? Honestly, I only save hard braking for driving hard on back roads and the track. I prefer the slow, steady braking thing in almost every situation, certainly anything that resembles traffic or a normal stoplight, to the point that, honestly, I have the reverse problem. I am a street breaker on the track. I have to constantly remind myself to brake later and harder on the track. Because on the track, you're supposed to do the exact opposite of what you do in the description being done here. You brake all that you can, short of traction loss, all that you can immediately, and then back off. And you do that as late as possible. Mm. That is exactly the opposite of how we normally drive. We, as a collective, normally drive on the road. Plus, if you do the 60 to 0 test at a stoplight, the guy behind you just hits you.
All right. And more of a comment from Fraser Haber here. He says he's infected his mother with the disease. She's now snapping pictures of cool cars she spots and sends them to him. She sent him a picture of a 57 Thunderbird in the Costco parking lot, and he thought it was hilarious. Who takes their 57 Thunderbird to Costco?
I don't know. Does that?
Because what are you buying?
Well, but hang on, though. 57 Thunderbird actually has a pretty good-sized trunk.
I guess it does.
That era just had, like, trunks.
I mean, Costcos didn't exist.
No, they didn't.
In 1957. Or
but you come out of Costco, nothing's in a bag anyway. You can just find all the nooks and crannies of that massive Grand Canyon trunk. It's probably a good idea.
My mother always, she would come home and be like, Paul, I spotted the coolest car. Like, okay, Mom, what was it? Well, it was white. How many doors?
Too.
Let's start with doors. I think it was two, or it could have been four. Oh. Did you see a logo? Did you see a badge? Could you draw it for me? No. I just saw it, and it was white, and it was cute. I was like, oh,
my parents do this as well. But what's sad is the high percentage of times that when we find out what it is, oh, really cool car. Was it a good color? It reminded me of your Lotus. And we find out what it is. It was a Saturn. This has happened more than once. I'm just like, I don't know if I should be offended or just horrified that your awareness of cars is actually that bad.
That's quite an insult.
More than once, they're like, yeah, it was really cute. It was yellow like your car. Reminded me a lot of your car. What was this? Here's a photo of it. Mom, that's a Saturn. And now I'm just offended. Anyway, yeah.
Well, there's a question we can't quite answer from Ryan Stamp asking, out of all the vehicles that we have shot for this season, which one would we want for a long-term test vehicle? The reason I say that, Ryan, is because we haven't quite actually finished shooting season 5. We have one more episode to do. It will be the last episode of the season, and it will be a standalone because of the turnaround times and the craziness that we've experienced. Yeah. So we will indeed have 6 full episodes, but this will just be a standalone before it pushes to Amazon Prime a little bit later. Mm-hmm. But so far, I want more time in that Veloster N.
I somehow knew you were going to say that. I really did.
That thing.
Yeah, I would love to have a long
time
for
that,
for sure. Yeah, for sure.
I want to drive the snot out of that thing.
Agreed. Actually, you've just stumbled up against something I wanted to mention. What we have done in the last couple of seasons is we have released our entire season on Amazon at once.
We
do that now because we have realized that Amazon doesn't offer, when you're posting like we do, Amazon doesn't offer the buy season option until you've closed the season out and said there will be no more episodes. Mm-hmm. The problem with this season is the last episode, episode 6, is running about 6 weeks behind the rest of the season. So I'm really debating, do we put out the episodes a few at a time and then wait on episode 6 and you can't buy season for a while? Maybe we do that because that gives you guys the option. If you want to buy them as they drop, great. If you want to wait, you can wait.
Sure.
But I'm telling you right now, we can't offer the buy season option until we get all the episodes out. And we aren't even shooting the last episode of season 5 for a couple weeks yet. And it is going to play the last week of September. Because that's when it'll be done. It's crazy. This is a weird thing happening. Mm-hmm. We're actually shooting our first stuff for season 6 before we even shoot the last of season 5. We didn't plan it this way, but it worked out.
Crazy. All right. Last question for me on here is a quick one from Derek Miller about Peugeot rumored to be coming back to the U.S. What can they learn from Alfa Romeo's recent return to the U.S.? Well, it's got to be reliable.
Make sure they run. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They have to run. I mean,
Driver runs. Make sure the ones you give out that are long-term cars run.
That's
because
true.
Even if I'm sorry, side note again, I got to rant about this again. We've had multiple Alfa Romeo Giulias that have been Turo cars, and we've talked about how much Turo cars get beat on. Every one of those owners, we ask them in detail, tell us about the reliability of this car. We typically ask them after the fact, and they're like, no, it just runs.
Right.
But so be sure, if you're Peugeot, by the way, this is my bit of advice. The car you give a car and driver needs to run wonderfully.
Well, yes. Ultimately, Derek, I think it's the French like the quirky cars. They like quirky. Just think, the Citroën Cactus. Just first of all, the name. Mm-hmm. My car is a cactus. Might sell in Arizona, I guess, maybe. But you have to ask yourself, if Peugeot is entering the market, what are they offering that you can't go buy right now.
Interesting point. Yeah.
What is it?
Yeah,
is it good? Is it comfort? Is it space? Mm-hmm. Is it electrification? Is it ease of use? Is it dealer experience? What about that car and that company will pull people into dealerships besides all the nostalgic car nerds that remember when Peugeot was here
and
we liked my 505 diesel and it clattered around and it was different.
And now it runs on old fry oil. Yeah.
Like, Saabs are too weird and quirky. Those are like mainstream. I'm going for Peugeot. What about them will be different and offering to the American public and the American, North American buyer will say that will differentiate them and pull people into the showrooms? Will it be styling? You can go so far on styling. Yeah. You can. But I'm just asking. So, guys, thank you so much for your questions. Really appreciate it. And we're definitely looking forward to next time. Cheers, everyone.